You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Many ways to tell the story of a war. You can analyze military strategies, discuss the actions of political leaders, and delve into the lives of individual soldiers and civilians. In his latest book, The Pacific, Hell Was an Ocean Away, Hugh Ambrose employs all of those approaches, plus a few more, in chronicling the lives of several members of the Marine Corps who were fighting in the bloody battles of the Pacific War during World War II. It's a companion volume to the 10-part HBO miniseries called The Pacific, which debuted last month. Hugh Ambrose served as its historical consultant. He was also a consultant on the documentary Price for Peace, and I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show today. Hi.
Thank
and I
you,
said
Larry.
Your latest book. This is your first book.
This is my first book. Yes, it is.
And you dedicated to your father, the famous World War II historian, Stephen Ambrose. Did he originally spark your interest in World War II history?
Yes, he did. My father, Stephen Ambrose, back in the 70s, led a lot of tours to Normandy. And I was lucky enough in high school to go with them and be the bag boy and help all the folks carry their bags to and from the room from the bus and do other various bottle washing duties and go from, well, we started in London and see Eisenhower's London, Winston Churchill's London, and then over to the coast, of course, the Norman coast, and see where the invasion took place, and then on towards Paris and Rommel's headquarters. And my father knew these people, had been doing it for a few years, and so these weren't just names in history books. These are actual people and places, and that started to get me caught up in it.
Well, children in those circumstances can go in one of two directions. They either can join it or they can reject it totally and start composing songs on a guitar.
Certainly. And some of my brothers and sisters chose the latter.
Your father and Steven Spielberg were the executive producers of Price for Peace. And how were you involved in that project?
I am the historical consultant on Price for Peace, which may seem strange when the name Stephen Ambrose is attached to it, but...
You did the grunt work?
I did a lot of grunt work on that and was very lucky to get to do that and to work with Steven Spielberg and my father and the director, James Maul. What was really neat about that project, it is about the Pacific War, but unlike other History Channel type documentaries, it found a new way to connect with the story, and it takes risks and in the way it organizes the material, and that's what I find that the Pacific in my project, some of the way that I came to craft that is created out of watching other people take the material and say and demand that they're going to find new material and new ways to connect to the important parts of it.
Because part of the problem in writing about something that we think we all know is you want to find a way to make it new for us all and to give us information that we might not have even thought was interesting and now find fascinating.
Yes, that is the challenge of history, and particularly World War II history, where there's been a lot of it. I think with the Pacific, we have an opportunity because most of the films about it have been terrible, and so there is an opportunity.
John Wayne winning the Battle of Iwo Jima.
That's right. The Sands of Iwo Jima, famously not one of Hollywood's best, but it's beyond that. I would also say that HBO has this ability to give you 10 hours to create this story, and that's a huge canvas and allows us to go from the first battle to the final shot in a way that you never could in a traditional film.
You say you use certain documents in this book that the world has never seen before. Where did you find them then?
Well, it takes a while to find documents that the world hasn't seen, but I found...
I thought only Robert Caro could do that.
Well, he is one of the great historians, that's for sure. I'm a huge fan of his work. I found a daily diary of a young Marine who was on Guadalcanal and through Australia and into Cape Gloucester and on to Peleliu. And there are just moments in there and a life that's in there that no historian's been able to know the code words that were used on a specific day and all. And that's not a huge thing, but when you really craft a story that you're excited about and then you get these just beautiful details, little gems to drop into a paragraph, man, you get really excited. You feel like not only am I going to involve the reader on this sort of moment-to-moment basis, but this is new information to history itself, and so it's fun.
So in this project, what came first for you, the show or the book?
Yeah, the way this all started is kind of crazy, Leonard. I was working with my father, Stephen Ambrose, for 10 years, and we had finished a project, and we were talking about what happened next, and he sort of said that he thought that he was done with the European theater, World War II. In the European theater, he said, there's a lot of great work that I'm sure younger historians are going to do, but I think I'm kind of done. And I said, well, we should think about the Pacific, because I think that there's something there that you would get excited about. And he said, well, let's start looking for that. And that was in 2000. And in 2002, he was diagnosed with cancer, and we lost him that year. And I told him I would try to finish it. And it was a year later that I got a call from Steven Spielberg and letting me know he's putting together this team for the miniseries and asking if I'd like to be involved. And of course, I was delighted and honored. And so we got started on it. And during the course of developing the miniseries, I developed the book, and I found stories for the miniseries and helped them develop that. And of course, the executive producers choose what's going to go in the miniseries and direct its storytelling. But I helped with that, and I found a couple of other guys who fit into our main characters of the miniseries so well. And I started to feel like there was something special here. That John Bassalone, one of the main characters of the book in the miniseries, most of what's written about him is false. And that the real character is just so utterly fascinating, not just because of his great courage, but also the choices he makes in his life. And so there was this excitement welling up in me that I felt like, you know what, there's something here.
Why do you think that the European theater has been more the focus of attention for historians? Is it because so many Americans come from Europe, or is it because the move across Europe, from both sides, eventually surrounding Germany and then entering Germany, is a lot easier to understand than this island hopping and the weirdness of the Pacific fight?
All of those reasons are absolutely at the forefront of why we pay more attention, because of the fact that most of our largest ethnic groups are in Europe.
And Hitler seems to be is more powerful in our imaginations than Tojo, even though Japan was killing lots of people, although I guess they still deny that happened in many circles in Japan.
And Hitler's empire is more powerful. It is the larger threat to the world, to human civilization. So it is the beast that must be conquered if we are going to move on and forward with human civilization. In a way that Japan, as large as it grew, was considerably more unstable in its hold on these other outlying areas that had all the natural resources that would fuel its own militarism. To your later point of the barbaric acts which both regimes perpetrated on its own populace and on conquered peoples, of course, the Japanese committed horrible acts, particularly against the Japanese, but also the Filipinos and other countries that they conquered. Particularly the Chinese, but when you look at that, and then you look at the Holocaust and the sort of organized killing, then that is something that mm-hmm. shocked the world, rightly so, is something that's never been seen before.
Now, the miniseries is fictionalized, actors playing the parts of real World War II soldiers. How much creative license is involved there?
Well, I'd rather just rephrase it to say that we worked extremely hard to get the stories right and to get the people right. As I told you, John Bassalone, one of our main characters, in most of what's written about him, the night he earns the Medal of Honor on Guadalcanal, he's running around barefoot. Now, that might not seem like the biggest and most important fact of all, but I wanted to chase that down, and Bruce McKenna, who is the head screenwriter and later co-executive producer of the HBO miniseries, both he and I felt like it was so important to find out this, because if we introduce you to a guy you're going to spend 10 hours with, and he's running around barefoot the night he performs this amazing act of courage, you're going to think he's crazy, and that this courage just comes from an adrenaline junkie or whatever. And we had to find out that because we wanted to introduce you to the real guy, because not only did we want you to understand that night, but later when John makes a very interesting choice about how he's going to live his life, we want you to evaluate that in a way that isn't just offhand, well, that guy was nuts anyway.
My guest is Hugh Ambrose, who's written The Pacific, Hell Was an Ocean Away. It's published by New American Library. He also was a consultant on the TV miniseries on HBO. Well, he was also older than a lot of the soldiers, wasn't he?
That's right, John.
He had a certain maturity that some of the others who were just kids didn't have.
John Bassalone was a professional Marine and had joined up in 1940 and had found his place in the world in the United States Marine Corps, and considered his profession was a proud Marine, and so he is the sergeant who leads the young men who join up after the Japanese attacked us at Pearl Harbor, and these young men who are inflamed with that sort of passion.
One of the men is Ensign Vernon Mike. McKeel is his name, called Mike, who left his family farm to enlist in the Navy's flight school. He doesn't make the TV show.
Yes, well, Ensign Vernon Mike McKeel, who was a naval aviator and involved in most of the important carrier clashes of the Pacific War, fits in with the characters who are in the miniseries and dovetails very nicely in the book, but ultimately, as I heard in the hallway one afternoon, renting an aircraft carrier from the United States Navy gets a little expensive. Now, I'm not sure why HBO
even
and the executive...
Steven Spielberg can arrange
it. I'm sure he could if he wanted to. I'm not quite sure why they chose to leave out that.
On the other hand, the story is fascinating because he, like many pilots, found it really difficult to land their planes on the flight deck of the carrier, something that a problem that took many years to finally solve.
Yes. Well, Mike was actually pretty good at landing, and we always hear about landing a plane on an aircraft carrier when we talk about this, and of course it's extremely difficult, and one must have great physical dexterity and mental acuity to perform this. But Mike's big thing about his flying in the Pacific that sets him different from other guys is that he found taking off from an aircraft carrier very difficult, and that the aircraft carrier captain doesn't always give you enough wind over the deck, and so...
And the ship is rocking back and forth.
Yeah, and a lot of those old planes, they'd have a sputter at the wrong point, and into the drink you'd go, and basically get run over by an aircraft carrier. So it was a very dangerous business for a young man to be in.
How did you wind up choosing the five people that you've included in this book? Are any of them still alive?
Dr. Sidney Phillips is still with us. Of the five, and Vernon Mike McKeel is still with us, and just spoke with him the other day. And the other guys left a big enough record. And one of the reasons that these guys are chosen, and the guys that I chose for my book, is that a lot of what you're going to read in the book isn't the musings of an elderly gentleman. Now, these are the letters or diaries or interviews that they did back during World War II, and so I can get you there with that detail and with the sort of warts and all kind of effect, because this, again, isn't an interview in most cases that I conducted many years later. Part of it is that they had to connect important parts of the war, like Mike McKeel connecting Midway with the Battle of the Philippine Sea, with Guadalcanal, with all these important carrier battles, to guys who are fighting on Guadalcanal or Peleliu or later in the Marianas. And so how do I connect the important moments of the war through these five guys who themselves are connected by happenstance and friendship? And then that makes it possible for the main character of the book to be the war.
So when you were going over what they had left behind, did that give you changed the way that you even understood a battle?
You can't spend a lot of time with these guys and not be surprised by the things you learn.
Because most of what we know comes from historians.
Yeah.
Historians who, every so often we do get a first-hand account or we get a great novel. Right now there are two wonderful new novels about Vietnam that are, I guess it took all these years for them to get published, for people to work it out for themselves. But they are surprising people about some of the things about a war that we thought we knew everything about. And I would assume that looking at the diaries of somebody who never really has played a role in the mm-hmm. way histories have been written will tell you all sorts of things that we couldn't have known otherwise.
Well, that's right, and that's part of why you do it. And part of it is just changing the focus of the lens that the writer uses. If you're writing a big Pacific War history with everything in it, and you're going to capture all the major themes and all the major players, then you're going to write at this macro level in which we kind of all know. But when I pick these five guys, then you get a very idiosyncratic view of the war, and then you get guys who have a glee club on Guadalcanal and singing at night, and you get guys talking about the nature of courage in a way that is more direct, more personal, I think more honest than in other books.
And in your introduction, you say that the story of a war can't be known as a whole. It can only be pieced together from tiny fragments. So do we see the same sense of fragmentation in the miniseries?
Well, I think the Pacific War was a vast and complex war, and that we have done our very best to create the narrative framework that will connect you from beginning to end and allow you, the viewer or the reader, to come to understand how each of these units is connected. In other words, you may have read a book about Iwo Jima or Guadalcanal. When you watch the miniseries or read the book, then you follow through from the jungles to the coral atolls to Okinawa and the fertile steppes of that northern area, and how the war evolves, how the men change, how the equipment changed, how these different conflicts are different, then you get perspective, and that's what good history gives you.
Have you spoken to veterans of the Pacific conflict about what you've written here? Have you gotten any feedback yet?
I have been lucky enough to do some book signings and other kinds of public appearances and have had a lot of gentlemen come up and talk to me, and most of them are very positive about the book and excited that their war, this whole other part of World War II, is getting the attention that it so richly deserves.
As a consultant for the show, what was your main function? Were they asking you about the accuracy of details, like the soldiers' uniforms, about the dates of battles, things like that?
I would say that Bruce McKenna and the other screenwriters are very, very hardworking and smart people who know how to read a few books and get the basic mm-hmm. details right. I certainly spent a lot of time helping them chase down parts of the story that weren't known. We have a major character, a guy named Bob Leckie, and he has a particular ailment which may or may not be psychosomatic, and so I went to the National Record Center to get his USMC medical record. I found the way that John Bassalone actually been killed as opposed to what has been written about him before.
Was he barefoot?
In fact, he was not.
There's also Eugene Sledge, whose parents don't want him to join up because he has a heart murmur.
Yes. Well, there are a lot of reasons why Eugene Sledge's parents don't want him to join up. His brother is already serving. He has what they believe is an infirmity. They're not ready to see him sent off. They'd like him to become an officer. Eugene Sledge has written a memoir, and a lot of people know it, and it is often quoted in other books. What I found were the letters that Eugene wrote as a young man, and then the letters that he and the members of his company wrote to each other in the years after the war, but many years ago from today. And so all of this allowed me to tell the story of Eugene Sledge in a new and fresh way and something worthy of people's attention. And he's a unique character. Each of these guys' personalities are so different. That's part of the fun of seeing how different people respond to the challenge.
Was that typical for soldiers to continue correspondence with each other after the war? I imagine that if it was, that in time they moved on.
Well, it's, again, a function of personality. Eugene is a man of letters and carries on correspondence and is also a person who came in late in the war. His best friend went in early in the war and fought some battles and won them and went to Australia and received the thanks of a grateful nation. You saved us from these hordes. He had a very clear and direct sense of what that war is about. Eugene Sledge fights later in the war when the casualties and the hostility and the hatred are spiking, and yet the war is essentially over in a strategic sense. Japan cannot win, and yet these people are still going to take every last life before they are killed. And it's a war to annihilation, and he's losing his sense of humanity, and it scares him. He doesn't even know what victory could look like, and he never got over that. And so those letters are about working through all of what the conflict between what he learned in his church and what he had learned on the battlefield.
Now that this has been completed, are you going to stay in the family business, World War II, or are you going to do something else?
Well, I wouldn't consider it the family business. I was lucky enough to be a part of this project and grateful for the opportunity. I believe my father's part of his legacy was that he found a lot of great stories in American history, and I hope to find another one that excites me as much as the Pacific.
Hugh Ambrose has been a consultant on one of the Steven Spielberg projects, and now on the second one, The Pacific, which is a miniseries, been on HBO, and he's the author of The Pacific, a new book from HBO NAL Caliber. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure, Leonard. Thank you. ¶¶